Well, our Middle East editor is Jeremy Bowen, and he is on the line. So is Peter Ford, our former ambassador to Syria. Jeremy, the latest from Aleppo?
Well, the latest is that, as you say, the guns have fallen silent, that the last buses have gone of those who wanted to leave. It's not a long journey over to the rebel-held areas, but they are there. And I think the Syrian war now begins a new phase.
And Peter Ford, as far as you are concerned, this is the pretty much the end of the suffering. It is the least bad outcome.
Indeed, although don't forget, as Jeremy mentioned, the armed opposition are only just over the horizon. And I think the priority for the Syrian government right now will be to consolidate in Aleppo and to defend against the possible counterattacks. You know, there are just 50,000 jihadi fighters in the outskirts of Aleppo and in the Idlib area. That's a large army, so the Syrian government forces are going to be tied up for some time to come. However, this is a time to welcome the fact that there is now a Christmas tree in the central square of Aleppo. There wouldn't be any Christmas tree, John, if the other side had won.
And you'd agree with that, Jeremy?
Well, the thing about it is that the nature of the opposition side, the fighters on the opposition side, has changed over the last 5 years of war. When I first met people in the armed opposition, when it was all kicking off, they were, I think, a different type of people to the way that they are now. The jihadi side has become much more prominent. It's not universal among them, but most of the groups now have some kind of Salafist type ideology, though quite a few of them say they're not part of any international jihad. The thing is that early on in the war, there were rebels there who didn't share those sorts of beliefs, who wanted a different kind of Syria, and who were hoping for an intervention from the West, from the US, from Britain, from France and others, that potentially might have been as decisive as the intervention that we've seen most recently from Russia, from Iran, from Lebanese Hezbollah and from various militias.
Where do we go, or where does the country, Peter Ford, where does it go from here now? Is it possible to bring Syria together again to the extent that it was ever really together, all of it?
I think, to be honest, that only a military solution is possible. The Russians and the Turks and the Iranians say they're now working together to install a countrywide ceasefire and proceed to a political settlement. But I think that's wishful thinking, and possibly there's another agenda at work there to further divide the so-called moderates on the opposition side from the people, the Salafists that Jeremy was just describing. But I think it most likely that the Assad government forces, which already control over 80% of the populated areas, will move on to mop up some of the remaining pockets. They will not, I think, make a full frontal attack on Idlib because of the number of jihadis there. Rather, they will concentrate on another area near Damascus called the Eastern Ghouta, where there are also large concentrations of opposition fighters. And having dealt with the Eastern Ghouta at that point, the Syrian government forces will turn their attention to the last bastion of the opposition in Idlib.
And then it will be, what, a sort of war of attrition?
I expect so, yes. Similar to the campaign that's just drawn to a close in Aleppo. But allow me to say that I think we're very selective in our indignation about the Aleppo campaign. Similar bombing is going on in Mosul and in Yemen, and we give the people there a pass. We don't talk about atrocities. We don't talk about war crimes, although they are indisputably being committed in both those theatres. We don't talk about genocide, Holocaust. we'll be lucky. We'll be lucky if those campaigns end in with the green buses. There were no green buses in Gaza. There were no green buses after the NATO bombing in Yugoslavia. I think we need to give the government a little bit of credit for what has been a relatively peaceful end to this terrible period.
That is something that we, a sentiment that we seldom hear, as you say. Is it taking it too far to say that you are sympathetic to Assad and that we should have been uninvolved right from the very beginning? We should have let him crush the uprising right from the start and have done with it?
I think we should either have put everything, including our own forces, onto the battlefield, or if our judgment, as it would have been my judgment, that was not realistic, or refrain from encouraging the opposition to mount a doomed campaign which has only led to hundreds of thousands of civilians being maimed and killed. We have made the situation worse.
That's not just being wise after the event.
If you look at what I was saying 5 years ago, I predicted exactly that. And it was eminently foreseeable to anyone who was not intoxicated with wishful thinking. The British Foreign Office, to which I used to belong, I'm sorry to say, has gotten Syria wrong every step of the way. They told us at the beginning that Assad's demise was imminent. They told us he'd be gone by Christmas. They didn't say which Christmas, so they could still be proven correct. But then they told us that the opposition were dominated by these so-called moderates. That proved not to be the case. And now they're telling us another big lie, that Assad can't control the rest of the country. Well, I've got news for them. He's well on the way to doing so.
But we must remember, obviously, that terrible things have happened. They have bombed hospitals. A lot of children have died who shouldn't have died.
Of course, but it was also a war crime to use hospitals as command centres, which is what the jihadis did. It was also a war crime to use schools to store ammunition, which is what the jihadis did.
Jeremy, your reaction to that?
Well, you know, certainly I think in terms of what the British government and other Western governments have been saying, it has been deeply unrealistic for quite a long time. The way that David Cameron used to say Assad must go and then really did nothing to make that happen, I think discredited Britain, because Britain is a member of the UN Security Council, and, you know, if we say things, we should actually have back them up with something, or we shouldn't say them. Even a week or so ago, Michael Fallon, the Defence Secretary, was saying that Assad has no future in Syria. Well, I mean, clearly he has got a future in Syria, and I think that one thing about the what's happened in Aleppo is that, you know, people need to readjust their thoughts about Syria. The fact is, Assad is not going to go. I mean, he has fought his way into a position where he's part of the future of the country. And he has quite considerable support as well among quite a lot of people.
And indeed, we have been here before, in a sense, I suppose, Mr. Ford. Homs, 1982, Assad's father bombed the place, laid it flat almost. And we didn't do anything about it. It just happened.
Yeah, Hammer. Yes, we didn't. I mean, and we just sort of let it go. The uprising on this occasion, though, was, if you look back to 2011, 2012, was much more considerable around the country. Back then in Hammer, it was about the Muslim Brotherhood, and there was a massive death toll. But for, you know, various reasons at the time, the West were prepared to let the whole thing go. And I think one thing that has changed is that countries make statements, but they don't necessarily back them up with action. I think the thing is that the whole Syria policy, and in fact the whole ideas about the way we treat the Middle East, need to lot of rethinking now, because we need to be realistic and from the West about what it is that we want, what we are prepared to do to make it happen, and what that means in terms of actual policy. Because coming out with a mixture of hand-wringing and somewhat macho-sounding verbiage occasionally, like, you know, Assad has no future in the country. Well, I don't think that's helpful, and it's not credible.